From NPR and WBUR, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. This is Here and Now. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says 2 days of trade talks with China that ended today were constructive discussions. But there is no deal yet. Both sides are trying to step back from the edge of an all-out trade war. Overnight, the Trump administration raised tariffs on Chinese imports, accusing the Chinese of trying to renegotiate a deal that was nearly done.
Let's bring in our Friday Politics Roundtable. Jose Diaz-Balart is a news anchor at Telemundo and NBC News. He joins us from Miami. Hi, Jose.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. And Chad Pergram, a Capitol Hill producer at Fox News, is in Washington. Hi, Chad.
Gentlemen.
So here we are now with a lot more tariffs. This morning, President Trump tweeted, "Tariffs will make our country much stronger, not weaker. Just sit back and watch." Chad, what is the talk on Capitol Hill today about this escalation of the trade war?
There is really a lot of concern, especially from farm state Republicans, who say, they see these slips in sales of big tractors and other major farm equipment because of these tariffs. Just in the past couple of minutes, the U.S. Trade Representative Lighthizer and the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin walked back into the White House. This is, as they are trying to figure out where they're going with these negotiations that are going on with the, the Chinese representation in Washington right now. I think the concern, though, is as they move into the next elections, think about senators who are up, who have stood four square behind the president on trade policy. Joni Ernst, Republican senator from Iowa. Iowa is a swing state. They've been devastated by floods there, so the farm economy is not doing very well right now. That could be a bellwether. And I've talked to a number of Republican senators dating back to last fall who keep telling me that farmers are going to stick with the president, but one wonders how much longer they will if this continues to hurt their pocketbook, if they don't get a good trade agreement, because at this stage, these tariffs are really, walloping them. And until that's corrected, maybe they get something that's better that resolves all that. But, they coughed up the $12 or $13 billion in emergency aid for farmers some time ago. The question is, will they have to do that again?
Jose, sure, farmers are important to the president, but there are a lot of people, a lot of his supporters are on board with him who think he's doing the exact right thing with tariffs. Don't they matter too?
They do indeed. And I think that harking back to the campaign when the president referred to that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and he would still have supporters. I guess there are supporters that will support him on anything, regardless of what he decides to do. On this issue, though, and Chad's focus on agriculture is really important, and the president seems very concerned about that. I mean, part of the tweet storm that he had today had to do with agricultural products, and if we bought $15 billion of agriculture from our farmers, far more than China buys now, we would have more than $85 billion left over. This deal is good. Even the tariffs are good for the economy, he says. The stock market has not been reacting very well to this.
Well, exactly. It's gone down quite significantly this week after a very, very long rally going only upwards over the last many months. There was a lot of other diplomatic news this week that we should also talk about, though. The U.S. seized a North Korean ship carrying coal, which was a violation of sanctions. North Korea test launched another missile. The Defense Department sent an aircraft carrier to the Persian Gulf in a standoff with Iran. And yesterday, reporters asked President Trump why this confrontation with Iran.
Well, they were threatening, and we have information. We have information that you don't want to know about. They were very threatening, and we just want to have we have to have great security for this country and for a lot of other places.
Is there a risk of military confrontation, sir?
I guess you could say that always, right?
Chad, is this the White House heading toward a military confrontation with Iran, or is this just something else?
Well, with this administration, sometimes you don't know. But it was significant that they moved the Lincoln Carrier Group, through the Suez Canal, and people made sure that there were pictures of this. They moved B-52 bombers from an air base in Louisiana into the region. Sometimes the United States does this because they see something in the intelligence which says, all right, maybe something's out there. Or maybe this is preemptive. They see something that's going on and they start to get into position. But, that kind of caught people here in Washington a little bit by surprise the past couple of days, considering all the other global turmoil. We talk about trade. We talk about Ukraine. There's all these things going on, and that was just one more thing. And then you had the Secretary of State Pompeo, heading in that direction a couple of days ago. That was not initially a planned stop.
Secret trip, right. Jose, I was going to ask you about North Korea and some of those other things we saw happen there this week. Is the relationship between Trump and Kim falling apart?
It's clear that the president is really intent on keeping that love affair between himself and the North Korean dictator alive. These three new missiles that North Korean leader tested over the past week. Boy, that's putting that relationship, I think, to a very intense stress. I don't know what the North Korean leader has to do before the president decides that maybe it isn't a love affair that may last forever. But let me tell you, let's add Venezuela. I mean, let's not forget that Venezuela is currently in a very important crisis. The vice president of the National Assembly was arrested this week. Today, he is being charged with treason. You know, Telemundo was we have our weekend anchor, Julio Vaquero, there in Caracas interviewing Juan Guaido yesterday. And, you know, is it time for an American intervention is some of the questions that are being asked in Latin America. It hasn't been very good for the United States in the past, as we know.
And if I can add one key thing here, probably the most significant and undercovered part of news of this that erupted this week was the formal nomination of Patrick Shanahan, who's been the acting defense secretary for 4 months, the second longest acting defense secretary in history. The president finally firmed that up. I mean, there was some concern just a week and a half or so ago if he wasn't going to nominate Patrick Shanahan and Jim Inhofe, a Republican senator from Oklahoma who's the chair of the Armed Services Committee. He had indicated that, you know, he thought that the administration, the president, should step that up so we have somebody permanent. He said, you know, when you're acting, you can't do anything. And if, God forbid, they do get into some sort of a global crisis with Iran or something in North Korea, you want to have somebody at the top. Now, Shanahan still has to be confirmed by the Senate, but it's thought that that would move through rather expeditiously.
You know, I spoke with Chuck Hagel, the former defense secretary, today, and Jose, we talked about Venezuela with him, and one of the things he said is that it would be crazy for the U.S. to use military intervention in Venezuela. Do you think that it's still on the table that the U.S. could get involved in that way if Guaido can't get enough defections on his own?
Well, I mean, or he's arrested charged with treason. I mean, look, Maduro doesn't see an easy exit to this crisis, and he is willing to do anything and everything to stay in power. And he has the support, you know, of Cuba and Russia, some China. But again, back to the interview that we had with the interim president, he said, hey, if the Americans come in as part of a, you know, military force, it wouldn't be external intervention. External intervention has already occurred here. The Cubans are here. And last 20th of May, Maduro held a fake election. So would it be crazy? Well, if there is enough international support, if something happens in Venezuela where they see that Maduro has really just, you know, gone after Guaido and, you know, treason means death, maybe it wouldn't be that unusual if the world got together
Chad,
and acted.
You know what? There was another international story that I want to get your take on. It was in the New York Times today that Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani is going to Ukraine to talk to the incoming president there about investigations that could benefit President Trump, highlighting Ukrainian business deals involving former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter, and also trying to downplay the origins of the Russia investigation with former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort and his Ukrainian business deals. A lot going on there. But what's your take on that?
Well, you know,
story?
Willie Nelson had the song "You're Always on My Mind," and what this really says is that you know, the origins of this investigation and the root of the Mueller report is still on the mind of the president and also on his attorney Rudolph Giuliani, and that's something they're trying to fully dispel as much as possible. Even though the Mueller report is out, and go back and say maybe this was started in a way to get at the president or something like that, or the candidate Trump in 2016, and if they can do that, they think that helps them in the reelection campaign in 2020. The other part of that is that it shows just how seriously the administration, the president, and his political team view Joe Biden as a viable candidate. And don't forget, you know, I spoke to a Democratic congressman congressman yesterday, who said, you know, there's a lot of people who think that the Democrats have to completely recalibrate their strategy going into 2020. They said, you know, when you break it down to, you know, 70,000 votes in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, where the president, you know, eked out wins in those states and therefore won in the Electoral College, this particular member said, maybe we don't need to do that much. And those are places that Joe Biden ostensibly would perform well. And maybe that's why the administration and the president is a little bit worried about Biden going into 2020.
That is Chad Pergram, Capitol Hill producer at Fox News, and Jose Diaz-Balart, news anchor at Telemundo and NBC News. Thanks to both of you. And Peter, by the way, news just in today that special counsel Robert Mueller will not testify before Congress next week about the Russia investigation, as Democrats had demanded. That is according to the House Judiciary Committee Chair Gerald Nadler, who also said today that his committee has issued a second subpoena for former White House counsel Don McGahn to testify on May 21st or face being cited for contempt. The White House is blocking McGahn from testifying and providing documents about possible presidential obstruction of justice in the Russia investigation. Lots to follow, lots to talk about next week. Well, let's take a break from the news now for another edition of the Here and Now DJ Sessions.
There goes the last DJ.
Jeremy Soule is a DJ at KCRW in Santa Monica. He joins us once again. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy. How are you doing?
It's not every day that we have another Jeremy on the show. It's nice to be among other Jeremys.
I agree. It's like are we hearing a feedback loop from Jeremy's?
Exactly, exactly. Okay, let's get to some of the music that you brought us. This is called Forever. It's by Ciroc.
My idols still move me. My life is a movie like Raheem and Mookie. I'm just trying to do the right thing. Hope that it improves me. My bamboos accustomed to me. You'll be soon accustomed to me. This tomorrow I got royal hemoglobin coursing through me. And my strength is now inhuman. I get that straight from my homie. Signed and sealed from out the grill of yours and truly. You better shine on them, baby. You're a star. You better be exactly who you are forever. Cause they gon' try and change your heart. Don't let up. Cause you're so damn fine just the way you better are. Shine on them, baby. You're a star. You better be exactly who you are forever. Cause they gon' try and change your heart. Don't let up. Cause you're so damn fine just the way you are. Overnight, I was in that mirror like 4 or 5 times a week on my mile of beats reciting affirmations like holy rites, and I still don't know everything.
I feel like we're hearing, even from KCRW DJs, about a lot of great female rappers right now. Is there a big resurgence going on?
Well, I mean, I'd like to think maybe there's just some shine being put on them, but they've always been there. And Ciroc is one of those who's fierce spirituality and fierce beauty. You know, she has a sophisticated amount of wordplay. I just love when any hip hop artist is rhyming and they don't need to just always have references to show how much they know just about hip hop.
What do you mean by that? Who are you thinking of there?
Like almost every single rapper across the board would talk about things that only other people that are in
that business hip-hop
or of that culture will know, even if it's a name brand of a clothes or a liquor or a car. It's kind of always like there's an inside story being told that the outside probably won't understand. And if she does those kinds of references, it's very rarely material items. She's talking about, she might talk about a type of incense or something like that, or ways that she was brought up, what her mother might use when she did her hair when she was younger. You know, it's sweeter. I think it's a feminine take, and it's nice to see when somebody uses what's normally a masculine energy, but I'll say an aggressive energy, and only aggressive meaning that she's strongly going at something. That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Not that she's angry, but that she is going after it, and what she's going after is peace and self-love, and that's all.
Okay, well, let's get to the next one. This is something from an artist who is no longer with us, but this is new. It was never released before. This is Marvin Gaye's Piece of Clay.
Father, stop criticizing your son. Mother, please leave your daughters alone. That's what's wrong with the world today. somebody to be their own piece of clay. Oh, everybody wants somebody to be their own piece of clay.
Wow, to hear that voice doing something that you haven't heard that voice doing before is pretty amazing.
You got me shedding a little man tear up in here in the studio here. I'm composed, but this is Marvin. This is one of my favorites, quite possibly my favorite artist, my favorite voice of all times. And Marvin's one of those people that literally, he just constantly was in the studio, and he played so many of the instruments by himself, and almost everything he has, he does all of his own backup vocals, maybe because his heart was broken when his previous singing partner passed away too soon, and all of a sudden he doesn't have that female voice, and almost from then on he had like 12 backup vocals of himself at all times.
How was this one not released before?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I don't know why it was shelved by the label. This was actually the record after What's Going On. It's called You're the Man, I should say. The name of the album is called You're the Man, and that song came out as a single, apparently. I've heard word that this wasn't released because of it was a little too controversial, speaking on some of the things that was going on with government. Even the song You're the Man is about the election, you know, about taxing, busing the people. How, if you can handle these specific issues, then you're the man and I got to vote for you, you know. And it wasn't about any one artist, about any one politician. It was a call for them to step up and realize that the people are going to decide their fate, if we can believe that that works in democracy. And for the record, I don't think I have ever heard a ballad or even any Marvin Gaye song start with an electric guitar solo.
Well, we'll put it up at hearandnow.org so that people can check out the whole thing. The next one that you brought us is called Yo Quisiera. This is by Grupo Fantasma.
Yo quisiera vivir en el cielo y sentado en las nubes recorrer el mundo. Yo quisiera jugar con las aves que felices vuelan sin temor a.
Now, Grupo Fantasma, they have won a Grammy. Tell us more about them.
Grupo Fantasma has a crazy story. First of all, they are out of Austin, Texas. Latin funk group, if I want to try to simplify and categorize their music. But there's so much more than that. A lot of people do or do not know that Grupo Fantasma, the purple one himself, Prince, heard them and said, hey, go get these guys and bring them to Paisley Park. And I want to jam with them. And they have some of the funniest stories about that time, because they were in there for a while. He has like a whole, like a hangar almost at Paisley Park that's basically a live music venue. It's not even a music studio. They were on a stage all set up, jamming, of course, learning his material, because that's what they were told to do. He takes a long time to show up in the studio. And he goes around and walks around one by one to each one of them, listening, as if doing a lap around them and judging them. And they definitely felt like that's exactly what he was doing. And then he goes, excuse me. And then he asks each one of them to step off their instrument. And then he plays their instrument and completely takes them to school. Every single one of them. It's his music. And he's like, no, it's more like this. I mean, drums, guitar, bass,
wow,
keys. Every single one of them, he went around and said, no, play it like this. And then they ended up being his touring band. They played with him on the ALMA Awards, and they played all of his after parties, and they were Prince's band for a long time, even though their music sounded nothing like Prince. So he saw just the chops and the talent in their playing.
I think we could go on with you all day long, Jeremy, with some of these songs and the stories behind them, but let's just get to the last one we have time for right now, which is Catch Me, I'm Fallen. This is by Kelly Finnegan.
So much is said about love, but not enough is said about the way you love.
Ooh, you love me.
Thinking of a smile, wishing for your kiss.
This is great, too, and it sounds kind of like a blast from the past.
I mean, it is on so many levels. That there's this beautiful resurgence right now of people who are returning to that dusties, soldies kind of stuff, soul oldies, mm-hmm. which is just so reminiscent of our East L.A. lowrider movement we've got here, of people just cruising in there in their beautiful, classic, restored cars and just cruising at the very lowest time down Whittier Boulevard or something like that, or meeting up in the back of some burger joint for those beautiful car shows and their works of art. And we got that dreamy reverb on the main vocalist. They're almost always about complete heartbreak, and there's some of the most beautiful music ever played when it comes to just an emotional connection to the instruments. There's a lot of vibraphones in the back. There's a lot of warmth in the back. You'll hear an acoustic guitar in that one, but that's about one of the only sharper, choppier things, and everything else is very smooth and warm and calming.
Hmm. That is Jeremy Soule, DJ at KCRW in Santa Monica. Jeremy, thanks so much. As always, great picks today.
Thank you so much. Good to talk to you, man.
And if you want to hear more, you can go to our Spotify playlist. It's NPR Here and Now on Spotify. We're also on Apple Music and at hereandnow.org.
This message comes from Here and Now's sponsor, Ember Wave. Ember Wave, the revolutionary new personal thermostat that is designed to help you find thermal wellness in any situation. Ember Wave can put you in control of your comfort in places like your freezing office, uncomfortable airplanes, cold restaurants, after a workout, at home, and more. Named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018. Learn more at emberwave.com. Ember Wave, balance through temperature.
More trouble is on its way to Houston after multiple storms this week brought more rain to southeast Texas than some parts of the region have seen since Hurricane Harvey. The floods have swamped roads, stranding dozens of cars on Interstate 10 last night, and many schools and public buildings remain closed. Houston Public Media reporter Andrew Schneider is tracking this story. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you.
Can you describe just how hard the rain has been falling? I saw a video of fans inside the Houston Astros domed stadium, and the water was just pouring in torrents from the roof.
Yeah, we're still trying to get to the bottom of how that happened. This is actually the second day out of the last three when we have had really severe thunderstorms. So the problem isn't so much, you know, what's coming down at any individual moment, so much as the fact that the ground is now completely saturated. The city, which is honeycombed with bayous and rivers and so forth, these are all now at capacity. They're starting to overflow. We're getting a bit of a break here in the central city and some of the surrounding areas, but it's supposed to pick up again over the next day or so. And given the level of saturation that we're seeing in the ground, we're expecting some more flooding.
This is not at the same level of the flooding that you saw in 2017 with Hurricane Harvey. Obviously, that was catastrophic. But we are seeing that in some places, flood levels are actually higher than they were during that storm.
Right. Well, in a way, this is normal for this time of year. I hate to say it, but people tend to forget that in the 2 years before Hurricane Harvey, we had pretty severe flooding. The spring of 2015 and 2016, we had the tax and Memorial Day floods. And in both cases, this is simply a matter of several days of very heavy rain, not enough time for the water to drain off, the ground getting completely saturated, the water having nowhere to go, and it just backs up. I mean, we're very close to sea level, so there's really no place for it to go.
Sounds like a lot of schools are closed today. Is the problem just that kids, families, teachers, they can't get there?
I think a lot of it is preemptive. They want to make sure that everybody stays safe. It's not just schools. A lot of government buildings have closed. Courts have closed. Most of the universities around town were scheduled to have commencement this weekend. Most of those have been postponed. So I think it's just a matter of people are – they want to make sure that everybody stays off the roads, and so they're taking efforts to encourage that.
The last time we spoke back in March, it was because the city was in the middle of a big fight. They were laying off 400 firefighters. Fast forward to today, an emergency like this, you need a lot of first responders. Have those layoffs happened yet? Is that affecting any of the rescue efforts underway?
What we've had so far is a layoff total of about 350 people. The majority of those are firefighters and firefighter cadets. But what's happened is that there's also been what they call a step down, which is that as they have reduced the need for overall firefighters, they've reduced the number of overall firefighters. Captains have been stepped down to lieutenants. Lieutenants have been stepped down further down the line. And so far, that has not had any noticeable impact in terms of the ability of the fire department to conduct rescues.
Okay. And just quickly, what's the forecast for the days ahead?
We're expecting more rain tomorrow.
All right. Andrew Schneider, politics and government reporter for Houston Public Media. Thanks for following this story for us.
You're very welcome.
North Korean missile tests, increased tensions with Iran, and the trade standoff with China. Just a few of the foreign policy challenges facing the Trump administration right now. And joining us now with his perspective is Chuck Hagel, former Secretary of Defense and former Republican senator from Nebraska. He's now a distinguished statesman at the Atlantic Council. He's with us from the Pentagon. Secretary Hagel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, what do you make of the Trump administration's Iran talk right now? Do you think, as the administration says, that there are credible threats against U.S. interests from Tehran right now?
I haven't seen the intelligence, so I can't answer intelligently that question. That said, I'm concerned that this administration has, not just on Iran, but on all issues all over the world, a really disconnected, inconsistently focused policy. And that inconsistency has confused allies and concerned them. Iran is a good example. When we did the Iran deal, three of our oldest allies were part of that deal, UK, France, Germany. It was pretty consistent with what we wanted to accomplish, what we did accomplish, and how we were going to handle Iran in the future. Now, with what Mr. Trump has done, he has put in question the whole future of not just our relationship with Iran, but isolating Iran in a very dangerous way that, at least the reports I get, are also playing out in an inconsistent way within his own administration in the White House. So it's not unusual to have an aircraft carrier battle group in the Persian Gulf. I mean, we do that all the time. But I am concerned that this administration is baiting Iran in a very dangerous way.
To what end? Do you think the administration wants to prepare for war with Iran?
Well, I know that you have people within the White House, specifically the National Security Advisor, John Bolton, who's been very clear on his position about Iran. Mr. Pompeo, the Secretary of State, has been rather bullish as well. You've got a president, however, who is strangely inconsistent in talking about Venezuela, for example, military intervention there, maybe military action against Iran, but yet pulling out of troops out of Syria, troops out of Afghanistan, and then cozying up with his buddy Kim Jong-un and Putin, and then the inconsistency of how we're dealing with China, especially with the tariffs this morning. So it's a mixed bag of policy, of strategy, of what we're doing, and it's just not isolated to Iran, but it, in fact, affects all of these countries.
You mentioned Venezuela. It appears the Venezuelan opposition leader didn't get the defections he was looking for in the sort of uprising that happened last week. What should the U.S. do now? Because the U.S., it appears, also thought that he was going to get more defections from the military in Venezuela than he did.
Well, I think you've always got to be very careful talking about leaders of governments of any country who must go. I mean, President Obama and the Obama administration learned that the hard way in Syria. The red line, Assad must go. He's still there. It makes the credibility of a president's word or the credibility of our country look a little weak. Then we are forced to say things like, well, all options are on the table. There may be military intervention, which would be crazy. Those countries do not want U.S. military intervention in their business, although they don't support Maduro. So what should we do? We've got to back off of this, come at it a whole different way, use our allies down there, use our friends down there. That's the whole point of alliances and allies. And I know President Trump devalues alliances. He discredits alliances. He undermines alliances. But in a complicated world, interconnected world like we're in today, I think continuing to work with the alliances, with the allies, support within Venezuela for Guaido, is the sensible and the rational way, and I think that will be the way that this thing will come about with where Maduro will leave.
And what about on the issue of North Korea? What should the U.S. approach be now, given the new missile tests that they've just conducted?
Well, you can't excuse North Korea's activities by saying, well, I have a good and close and real friendship with Kim Jong-un. I'm not worried about those tests. No big deal. Well, it is a big deal. Those were ballistic missile tests. They violate the UN sanctions. They violate the UN restrictions. I think the South Koreans have come at it in a logical, smart way, a step-by-step, developing trust, confidence in each other. But the North Koreans are going to have to, at some point here, show that they're willing to be serious about denuclearizing. They have done nothing. They have signed nothing. They have given us nothing. They have taken no action, even though we've had two presidential summits, face-to-face summits. Mm-hmm. And I think Trump, for some strange reason, continues to let Kim Jong-un off by saying, well, he's my good friend and I trust him. Well, that's not the right approach. I think Japan and South Korea have to be part of this. I think Russia's got to be part of it, China. I would come at it the same way we came at, and I know Trump won't agree with this or his people, but I would come at it the same way we negotiated the Iranian nuclear deal. I don't think you're going to do a one-on-one U.S.-North Korea and then everybody else agree to it. I don't think that's going to happen. We don't live there. The rest of those countries live there. So I would come at it in this using the same model and formula that we used with Iran.
I mentioned earlier that you're speaking to us today from the Pentagon. President Trump is expected to nominate Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan to be the permanent successor for Jim Mattis, who resigned last December. First of all, do you support that nomination?
Yes, I do support it. It's very important that we have a Secretary of Defense who is seen in the eyes of the world as legitimately confirmed by the Senate, has power, has authority, and speaks with authority. So, and I think that's particularly important, too, because the Pentagon is, and State Department's the same way, and I think a lot of departments, is after 2.5 years of this administration without many Senate-confirmed appointments, without many leaders in the building. And
there's an acting White House Chief of Staff. There's an acting Homeland Security Secretary right now.
That's right. Well, and the president has said just 2 weeks ago, I like acting heads of these departments. It gives me more agility. Well, I don't think that's very smart for a lot of reasons, because there's always a question about the authority and the credibility, especially with our allies, of an acting person. That person could be gone tomorrow. So I'm very happy to see this, and I hope that they can move on confirming Shanahan very quickly.
I want to ask you one more thing, Secretary Hagel. The things that I've asked you about today are all the things that are in the news today or in the last few days, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela. Is there something that we're not talking about that, as you look at it as a former Secretary of Defense, that is a major national security issue that you think the U.S. should be paying more attention to right now?
I don't want to go back to the big headline story for the last few months, especially the last couple of weeks. That's the Mueller report. The reason I bring that up is because that report started out and was about Russian interference in our 2016 elections. And what that was about, as much as anything else, was the use of cyber spying and all that goes into that. And I think we in the United States have to always be mindful that it isn't just the overt or the front page stories, I think, getting to your question, that we have to pay attention to, and we do. We have to pay attention to everything. But when you've got a president who has intentionally weakened the institutions of governance, for example, the FBI, he dismisses the 16 independent intelligence agencies on their position on what Russia did and is continuing to do in meddling our elections, what they did in 2016, but he dismisses that. That's dangerous because you weaken the very governing institutions that protect this country. I think we're going to find the next year and a half we're going to have to pay more and more attention to that, because we're seeing our governing institutions weaken, partly because they are being discredited by lack of confidence, lack of trust in our institutions. When that happens to a society, that means we're in trouble. I mean, we can't govern. And we see the paralysis and the dysfunction here in Washington. So I think we really got to pay as much attention to internal issues in this country as we do external.
That is former Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Roller skating to disco music originated as a fad in the 1970s, peaked in the 1980s, and while there are still places to get your roll on, the craze has pretty much come and gone. In New Hampshire, there's just one roller disco venue left. It isn't very popular anymore, but when the owner recently said he was thinking about closing, people got kind of sad. That's because in its heyday, dancing on skates was more than just a roll around the rink. New Hampshire Public Radio's Brita Green reports.
Great View Roller Rink is located in the small town of Enfield, New Hampshire. It's an ugly box of a building near the bottom of a hill. It's actually hard to believe the place is still in business. Sometimes there's just a couple of cars sitting in the parking lot. But in its heyday, in the 70s and 80s, the rink was a completely different scene.
Oh, wow. It was like almost bumper-to-bumper people.
It was always so packed.
I mean, I've got, what, 600-700 people on my Facebook page, and the majority of them I met at roller skating.
You know, you'd have a 7-year-old grandmother out there roller skating. And
those who weren't, they were at table just talking.
It wasn't just something to do in a place with not much else going on. It was the spot to be for miles and miles around. And there was romance, too. Kids sneaking in their first hand-holding, their first kiss.
So it was like a dating service at the same time.
My future wife, it was her first time skating. This year will mark our 37th anniversary.
It was freedom. It was amazing. It was.
Here we go, opening this skate bag.
This is Debbie DeHavens. Her dad, Al DeHavens, built the rink in 1977.
Now, I have not had these skates on since Ronald Reagan was president.
She says her dad, Al, moved to New Hampshire from New York City as a young man and was struck by how rural it was, how little there was to do. Somehow, he got the idea to start a roller rink. At first, he bought a place in a different town. It was old and cramped with a rough wood floor. But he got people to come over and played, among other things, calliope, that old-timey circus music.
Well, I think it was something that he brought with him from the city. I always wondered if he was involved in vaudeville or the circus or what, but he just seemed to really like that calliope music.
It might sound odd, but Debbie says it took off.
So many people wanted to skate that the nights we were open, there were too many people on the skate floor at one time.
In fact, it was so popular, Al decided to build a new, much larger rink in Enfield, a neighboring town. Opening day, Debbie can still remember. There was a huge crowd. She has a photo of her dad from that night. He's wearing black skates with white wheels.
with the mirror ball, you know, the disco mirror ball going, and he had black lights, and he had the blinking red lights across all of the roof beams, and it was very impressive to see not only the floor be christened by my father, but also just the whole visual. I was very proud. Very proud of him.
And that's how it started, the golden age. They had themed nights over the course of the week. Wednesday was disco night. That was a hit. But they also introduced some country music, and they'd play rock and roll, too, on the weekends. At one point, Al pulled Debbie aside, told her he had a private booking coming in, but she couldn't tell anyone who it was. Turned out it was Aerosmith, like the actual band, one of Debbie's favorites at the time. A couple members of the group spent their childhood summers nearby at a popular lake area. Now, near the height of their fame, they wanted to spend a private evening roller skating at the rink. Debbie couldn't believe it. She got to work making mixtapes for them to skate to. A couple of different options, some with their own songs and some without. They arrived and she went out on the rink to skate with them, but immediately fell right on her butt.
And the band came and picked me up, which I thought was just so ironic. But we had a wonderful night. You know, they flipped and flopped around, but for the most part, they did pretty good. And they had a great time. And we had a great time watching them. And that's a memory that I'll always cherish.
But by the mid to late 80s, she says, her dad was ready to retire. He sold the rink to a man named Peter Martin, who's overseen its fading years.
We tried to continue building it up, but then the world turned differently, and you ended up with soccer moms and kids brought everywhere to do everything but roller skate.
On Friday and Saturday nights, he says they're now averaging only about 30 people out on the skate floor. He tried to sell, but it didn't happen. So now he's reconsidering, throwing around other ideas. Maybe with so many people nostalgic about the rink closing, he can convince them to buy annual memberships that would secure the money to keep it open. It's possible this could work, but it's hard to imagine. Times have changed. For now, thousands of skates sit largely in storage on the old shelves. The disco ball still spins, but it's nothing like the glory years. So the magic of the roller rink, it'll likely live on as it has, in people's memories, rather than out on the floor. For Here and Now, I'm Breechy Green.
Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Peter O'Dowd.
I'm Jeremy Hobson, talking to the one person who is listening to this at the roller disco. Wherever you are, it's Here and Now.